Sometimes, the best stories in golf aren't found on tour. You'll find them at the back of the range. And here's your host, Ben Adelberg.
And welcome to the back of the range. I am your host, Ben Adelberg. This is episode 336. It is that time of year once again where all eyes in the world of golf shift to Augusta. Thanks to the Augusta National Golf Club, the Back of the Range is returning to provide coverage of the Augusta National Women's Amateur and to spotlight the five amateurs competing in this year's Masters. So for the next 2 weeks, you'll see and hear my coverage of these two great tournaments and the amateurs vying for titles in Augusta. As always, make sure you're following along on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Podcasts will be dropping. You know you can find those on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you get lost in all that, real simple, go to the website, thebackoftherange.com. My guest on this episode is one of the favorites heading into the Augusta National Women's Amateur. She is Megan Schofield, the reigning U.S. Women's Amateur Champion. Yes, she did capture the title last summer in L.A. at Bel Air, but even before then, her playing resume checked all the boxes. All-American from Auburn. Three times she's represented the United States on the Palmer Cup team. Academic honor roll, all SEC, you get the picture. She was also invited to the most recent practice session held for the Curtis Cup hopefuls. So before she embarks on a professional career, she's looking to represent the USA again as an amateur this summer at Sunningdale. Megan is making her fourth appearance at ANWA and potentially her final one. We spoke about the tournament that lies ahead, what she will miss about college golf, and also her superstitions, which, you will learn, are a family trait. Fun episode, someone to follow this week in Augusta. Let's not waste any time. Megan, welcome to the Back of the Range. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. We're getting to that time, back to Augusta. I'm catching you literally in the car. This is not the first time we've had it done a podcast episode in the car, but we'll get to that later. But we're in the car heading up to Augusta. This is basically just another week of a college golfer, long road trips. What's your present location? What's your 20?
Are we on 85? I think we're on 85 heading through Atlanta. I'm not really sure what road we're on, actually.
Okay, just want
to... But we're almost to Atlanta.
Just want to make sure everyone listening can just breathe easy now. Megan's not driving, so don't want anyone to think that she's on some dirt road. She's not driving. She's got a pilot there. We'll get to him later. But, you know, college golf, like I said, long road trips. Everyone has their favorites on the road, snacks, coffee, music, no music, audiobooks, podcasts, of course. What's your go-to? Like, what's the best way to get through a road trip?
Well, if we're traveling with our team, we travel in like a Sprinter van. So we have a TV.
Okay.
So we watch a lot of like movies or TV shows. But then if I'm in the car with like CJ or like other girls, we'll just like listen to music or listen to like a random podcast, but nothing like strict. Like, we're not really like, okay, we have to watch this or have to listen to this, those kind of things.
And as a fifth year senior for Auburn, you pretty much run the show as what goes on that TV. You're not letting freshmen control that, are you?
No, they usually don't get to pick, but it's a collaborative effort.
Okay.
Me and Anna Foster, she's another senior. We usually have the remotes and we just kind of decide what everyone's going to watch.
There it is. Now, this is a delicate topic we're getting into right now, right off the bat. I think anyone that follows the Back of the Range knows that I think I'm almost contractually obligated at this point to stop at a Buc-ee's anytime I see one. Is Buc-ee's a go-to for Auburn women?
Anytime we see one, yes. We usually stop. Like, when we went to Hilton Head, we stopped at a Buc-ee's. And then we came back from Vanderbilt in the fall, we stopped at a Buc-ee's. We have one in Auburn, but it's like on the opposite side of town. Like, we never drive past it and it's like 20 minutes out of the way. So no one really goes to that one. But when we're on our road trip, if we have one, we'll stop.
Yeah. I kind of feel like I would do the same thing. If, if, I mean, Bucky seems to all about being the road trip. That's the draw.
Exactly.
I don't know if I'd be as down for Bucky's as I am now if it was in my town. So like Coach Llewellyn isn't like fixing the schedule for the team based on Bucky's location. She's not, I mean, it's not that bad. I mean, she's actually...
It's not that bad, but if we know we're going to pass one, we'll ask her like, hey, can we leave at this time so we can go there for like lunch or for dinner?
And she'll be like,
okay, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. That's impressive. Okay. That's,
yeah,
that's a new one. I haven't heard that one yet, but I love it. That's good, man. We can go in a whole rabbit hole going down with Bucky's. We're not going to do that, but you're obviously on your way to Augusta for the Augusta National Women's Amateur 4th appearance in this tournament. But let's go back a little bit. You're Florida native, one of the rare few, as am I, Monticello, Florida. Now I'm way, way, way down in South Florida near the West Palm Beach area. Monticello, for people that may not be familiar where it is, and I'll explain while I'm asking you to describe that. Talk about where Monticello, Florida is.
So it's east of Tallahassee by like 30 miles and south of the Georgia line by like 3 or 4 miles. But it's super, super tiny. We're the only county in the state of Florida without a red light. So we have like 5 towns that are like make up the county, and there's not a single red light in any of those towns. Like we have like yellow caution lights. Sure. But it's really small. Like, I think there's 14,000 people in the county, give or take. But it's great. Like, I'm very glad I grew up there. Like, I live a very true small town, Southern girl life.
So this is the completely different kind of aspect of Florida. Like, I'm down here where everything's moving super fast and just everyone's in a rush, and we get a lot of tourists and not everyone knows who you are. You sounds like you come from a town where everyone knows who you are and you're just waving to people, and it actually sounds pretty sweet, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's great. Yes, it definitely, everyone knows everyone, which can be a good and bad thing.
Sure.
But no, it's great. Like, I truly really loved where I grew up and definitely would not have it any other way. Both my parents are from Miami. And they knew when once they got married, they're like, we cannot do this fast paced life forever. So
they're probably like, yeah, this is not where we want to raise kids either.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it was definitely a great thing for us, and me and my sister both love living there.
How did they pick Monticello?
My dad's family, he had some family like in the Live Oak and Perry, Florida area.
Okay.
So he's kind of gone up there a little bit when he was a kid, and then bought some land when he was like 19-20 in the county over, and then ended up not wanting to live there because it was too far from Tallahassee, which is like pretty decent sized city.
Sure.
And they just kind of wanted to live a little bit closer to like a decent sized city, and they chose Monticello.
Simple as that. There you go.
Yep.
So you have a little bit more access to Georgia and to Alabama, obviously, going to Auburn, but you have a little more access and also the ability to kind of get into different areas of the country a little bit easier than obviously someone in South Florida does. I think I'm 5-6 hour drive just to get somewhere near Monticello. What were some of the when you're first starting playing golf and obviously, you enjoy the game, you start having some competitive opportunities. Obviously, you got FSGA, Florida State Golf Association, does a great job. But for you to get, I think you're closer to Auburn than you are to Orlando. So, Floridian based on the map, but it makes it kind of difficult for you to get to junior golf tournaments throughout the state. Like, what did that look like when you first started being competitive?
So, we played, when I first started playing like golf tournaments, I played a lot of like one day 18 hole tournaments. Like in the Panhandle, they have this tour called the Red Hills Golf Tour.
Okay.
And so it's like just, they have one tournament a month, and it's really kind of just to get you into the game, that kind of thing. It's like a developmental program. And so I did that at first, and that's all in the Panhandle. So, I mean, 3 hours, longest drive tops.
Sure.
And then I started playing, the Southeastern Junior Golf Tour. which is all in the southeast, clearly. And I played that a decent bit and then kind of intermix FSGA and FJT events in with those. But yeah, some of the FJT events, they were very far. Like to Miami, it's probably like 7-8 hours for us. So we really did a lot of SJDT and then started playing AJGA once I kind of was ready for that next step.
What is, before you got into AJGA, because I feel like that's when you kind of get on this track to, okay, I think I want to play in college and I'm playing on a national schedule, but let's go back. We're going to talk about good stuff too, but let's talk about what's the most bitter defeat of your junior golf career? What's the one that still sticks out?
So my first AJGA Open, I played the Davis Love, the third event in Brunswick, Georgia.
Okay.
And I was leading after the first 2 days and shot 77 the final day and lost by like two. And that was like my first ever AJGA Open and lost it. So I was like, oh man. Cause you know, all the fully exempt and trying to get all the stuff sorted.
Sure.
So that one definitely, that one I still remember.
And you still ended up being a U.S. women's amateur champion.
I know. Who would have thought?
it still worked. By the way, when you won, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but when you won, what was it like in Monticello? Have you been back home since you won?
Oh, yeah. So we live in like a kind of like a neighborhood. It's not like a huge neighborhood. There's probably like 20 houses in it.
Okay.
And so my next door neighbor that lives like right across the road from us, he is my golf coach.
Sure.
So there's a 9-hole course that I grew up playing on. That's like half a mile from my house. So a lot of those guys were up there at the club watching it. And then our neighbors and some of our other friends were at our coach's house watching it because my parents didn't want anyone over because they had done everything a certain way every single day. And they're like, we can't have anyone over to watch it because we don't want to mess anything up. So like the second after I won, my neighbors, like our coaches, they all came over to my parents' house and like I was able to call them for a few minutes before all the interviews and all those kind of things happened. But yeah, no, it's a big ordeal. And we went home over in November and our 9-hole course had like a little celebration kind of thing. Like I brought the trophy home. We had like a nice dinner and then the big course in Thomasville, Georgia, they had a dinner the very next night for me too, which was pretty much the same thing. Just recognizing me, talking about the win. But yeah, no, it's in the road, like the main road that I live off of. They're like renaming it. Like, you know how they do this dedication?
Sure.
Like, it's like going to be the Megan Scoville Road, I guess.
I was literally going to.
That sounds like so vain, but
No, I think it's great. I was literally going to ask you. I was like, are they going to name a street after you? I mean, I'm thinking like this is a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was pretty cool. Like I got to go to the county meeting where they like had got a little certificate for me and gave it to me.
Proclamation, this street. Yeah. Will now, that's awesome.
Yes. Yeah. So it's super cool.
Trying to resist the urge to say, does the road fade to the right? I'm not going to do that. We'll just cut that out. Now going to Auburn, and you mentioned, by the way, don't think for a second that I'm not going to bring up the whole superstition thing with your parents because I've done my research. We're going to come back to that. I don't want you to think that just breezed over my head. I totally got you. But going to Auburn, you had a great junior career. You kind of had did you have your choice of schools that you wanted to go to that coaches were kind of interested or – I'm assuming Auburn was a draw just because of proximity, but you're also close to FSU. Was it a challenge trying to figure out where you wanted to go?
Not really. I knew like in eighth or ninth grade, once I kind of started playing that I really loved Auburn, but I definitely was not ready to make a decision. And that was before they made the rule change where you can't talk to coaches. Yeah. Like, so all these girls were committed to schools like ninth grade at the latest. And so a lot of spots were filled.
Okay.
So I kind of was in like a filler period. And a lot of the schools that I wanted to go to, they had already had their girls, and I developed really late, which, no, it's not my fault, but it just kind of was the way it happened. And yeah. Auburn had a spot open up for me really, really late. I committed like my senior year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I loved Auburn. It's perfect town. I kind of always wanted to go there. I went to a golf camp there, and I like told my parents, I was like, I would love to come here and go to school here. Like, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. That whole recruiting issue. And I mean, who knows, first of all, I mean, emotionally and intellectually between 13 and 15 or 13 and 16, whatever ages it is, I don't care what your passion is, baseball, football, architecture, art, doesn't matter. There's a whole lot going on in that age range.
I know. I think it was a really good rule change. Like, I know for some of these coaches, it's a little bit more stressful that time of year when like all these kids they can talk to now, but I think you get to see players develop. Like, you get to kind of see when they're closer to coming to you, like, oh, this kid's really good, or oh, maybe this kid's not as interested as they once were in golf.
Yeah. Yeah, I see some. I don't go to many junior tournaments. I go to the Jones Cup Junior in December, and it's almost like you can tell which kids have already committed and tell which ones are still in that process, because the ones that are committed, it's almost like they're just there on holiday. They're like, hey, this is great. We're in Sea Island for the holidays, playing a little golf. And there's other ones you can tell, like, every score they're thinking is going to matter as to whether or not a coach is going to pick up the phone after the dark period.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Not good. Well, I bet you're glad that that's over, and glad everything worked out with Auburn. When you arrived as a freshman compared to maybe, you know, like how you play the game now and maybe what your practice regimen is now compared to what it was, like, how much of a jump have you made? Not just in your achievements. That's on paper. We got that. But I'm talking about, like, you know, how did you approach the game, your preparation, your practice, your strategy? How much has that changed from starting at Auburn to now as your Auburn career is coming to a close?
It's definitely changed a lot. I would say I'm a lot more aware of things that I do in my swing on the golf course. Like, I have a lot more self-awareness. I felt like when I came to school, I really didn't know if I was hitting it bad or hitting it right or hitting it left. Like, I didn't know what caused that.
Sure.
It was kind of like, oh, I'm hitting it left. Like, what do I need to do? And I feel like now I'm have a lot more experience and kind of can figure out, like, oh, if I'm hitting it left, I'm doing this. I do a lot more technical work, where before I feel like I would just kind of go to the range and hit balls just to hit balls, like never trying to work on something, or didn't really have a lot of purpose with what I was doing.
Yeah.
I definitely still do some of the same things I did from a young age. Like, I always putt on a ruler, like, every single day.
Oh, I hate that rule. I hate that drill. That's so frustrating.
And I've done that since I was like 15, 16. But okay. I just feel like as you mature and you like realize how little time you have to do every little thing that you want to do. So I feel like now when I go out there, there's a lot more intent behind what I'm doing.
And you said you've also brought in a little more of technology to it as well. Like, I mean, just recapping what I think you just said is, you know, you just go on the range and hit balls and try and feel your way out of maybe a slump. And now you're getting more analytical, or at least kind of incorporating a little bit of it.
Yeah. Like, I use TrackMan. We have like the Swing Catalyst V1. So I'll do swing like video work and just like really try and figure out, like, what am I trying to accomplish in the swing? What am I trying to accomplish like every day? Just really trying to make the most out of my time.
Okay. Interesting. So do you kind of go like, okay, what needs to be fixed now? Or do you kind of have a kind of a plan of attack throughout an off week where, okay, I'm going to dedicate a certain amount of time to this, you know, whether it's short game or long irons or, you know, wedge work, trying to hit some benchmarks and then move on to the next thing? Or is it more like just kind of seeing what needs help?
I feel like I really enjoy hitting balls. Like, I like spending time on the range.
Okay.
So I spend a lot of time hitting golf balls and like really trying to figure out, like, I feel like a lot of golfers, you always are trying to work on one little thing in your swing, and it's always the same thing. Like, I always have the tendency to get a little long, a little inside. So I'm always trying to work on those things and, like, really instill good habits of not doing that. And then we do a lot of team practice. So a lot of days we have, like, 2.5 hours of, we have to accomplish these things. Like, we have a whole practice set up for us. And then the rest of the time, if you have 30 minutes, 40 minutes, however long you can practice on your own and do what you want.
So structure with a little bit of freedom after you get your work done.
Yep.
Makes sense. Well, you're heading to Augusta. We have established that. We're Auburn just picked up a team win at the Liz Murphy, the UGA tournament in Athens. Kind of piggybacking on what we just talked about as far as your prep, you know, you got off to a really good start in the first round. I'm sure you didn't close the way you wanted to in that tournament, but
yeah,
you know, a lot of players are coming in just like you are. They're coming off of a college tournament. You know, I think you can at least temporarily put college golf, you know, on the back burner for a week and really put your focus into Augusta. What are you looking to accomplish in your final prep once you get there?
I spent some time this morning on the range trying to figure out kind of what went wrong in the last two rounds. I definitely didn't hit it as well as I would have liked. So just kind of spending a little bit of time trying to work on the takeaway and my posture at address. But I don't know, the next few days, I mean, Tuesday is really just to get to know the course again, see it, figure out a good game plan. And this is CJ's first time seeing the golf course. So it'll be good for him to kind of spend a little extra time walking around, seeing the balls roll out on the greens, all those kind of things. And my coach is going to come up and help me a little bit after the round on some of the things in my swing. But I feel like for me, I'm never one of those people. And I assume this is most people, like, I'm never fully like happy with how I'm hitting it.
Sure.
I feel like I'm always kind of, I need to have something that I'm trying to feel. Like, I'm never just going to get up there and be like, oh, my swing feels perfect, I don't need to think about anything.
Sure.
That's just not how I work. So I definitely want to work on my few little swing things tomorrow and really try and like get those tuned up nicely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a big week of the year. And, I mean, this is your fourth appearance. I know there's that fifth invite that didn't happen because of COVID, but, so you're obviously you're a vet, there's going to be rookies going in kind of like Casey Weinfeld, your teammate at Auburn, you know what the week brings, you know how to prepare. It must be just a lot to take in no matter how many times you've played there. Do you remember what kind of the feeling was in 21 when you're making your debut there at Anwa?
Definitely overwhelmed. There's just a lot of things that happen the whole week, which is great. Like, it's a great week. They keep you busy, which is awesome. But I think it's very easy to try and want to do every little thing and feel like, okay, I need to practice as much as I can on Monday and spend all day on Tuesday at the golf course, like preparing, when I think everyone there is talented enough to just do what they've been doing for all the other events, you know, that you prepare for. I think sometimes when you try and make an event and not bigger than it is and like not stick to what you do really well and like focus on how you always prep, I think that's kind of where you can mess with yourself a little bit. I definitely know for me the first year I was very overwhelmed by everything. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I feel like I shouldn't be playing here, you know, but it's such a great week. And I feel like after you get over that first one, it's like, okay, I've done it once now. And now all the rest of the times, it's still going to be great and fun, but now I know what to expect.
I've seen this firsthand. There is a definite difference between playing that practice round at Augusta National. So for everyone listening, just to give a little refresher, so the first two rounds of ANWA are at Champions Retreat, about 20 minutes away from Augusta National. There's the cut after that second round. Regardless of a player makes the cut or not, everyone in the field will play a practice round at Augusta National. Some are preparing for the final round. Some are just getting a loop around the club, and that's that. What's the difference between a practice round at Augusta National when you miss the cut versus when you have made the cut?
Missing the cut, it's definitely just like a stroll in the park. Like, you're kind of just taking it all in, having fun. My dad and my coach were able to like walk outside the ropes, get to chat with them, just kind of have fun, not really think about anything. It's very carefree. But then like last year when I made the cut, I was like, oh my gosh, like I actually have to focus mm-hmm. and really like write notes and try and like prepare, like I'm playing tomorrow. So it's definitely still fun. Like, and I was, anything can happen, but I was pretty far. I didn't really have a chance to win. I know that sounds terrible, but I was pretty far outside the lead. And Rose was playing some pretty good golf. And I was just like, I'm going to prepare and like go and try and play my best tomorrow, but I'm still going to have fun at the end of the day. Like, sure. This is still going to be a great experience. This is my first time making the cut. Like, I'm not going to stress myself out and like make this miserable. Like, regardless of what I shoot tomorrow, like it's going to be probably one of the best days, if not the best day of my amateur golf career.
What whole stretch do you find yourself constantly looking forward to at Augusta National? Like, I'm sure you got to be thinking about coming down to 12T once you make the turn, I'm guessing.
12T, that's such a hard tee shot. I like airmailed it into the woods last year. Like, I hit it so long left. Like, what? I had a re-tee. Like, I had a provisional on that hole. Like, we did not find the golf ball. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, Jordan Spieth, like, this is going to be a nightmare. That's all I could think about.
Well, you weren't short. I mean, I guess that's not really a whole lot of consolation if you're knocking into the other golf course on the other side of the fence. But I mean, yeah. But you're not short. You're not short.
No, I was not short. And I luckily hit a great second shot in there. But the guy up there is, like, still looking for my golf ball. And I was like, please don't look. I was like, stop looking. Stop
right.
looking. And he's like, okay. I was like, I just want to get out of this hole, like, just let me leave, please do not find my golf ball. It's 40 yards long left of this green.
Yeah, I don't know what I mean. What does the unplayable even look like over in that area?
I don't even know. I didn't right. even want to know. But the stretch of holes, I feel like I like the fact that I'm really hard. Obviously, it's super iconic, beautiful,
right.
great golf holes. But it's just really challenging. So I teed off on 10 last year because of the rain delay. Like, they had all that bad weather coming in, so we did double tee. So I went off the back nine first and had myself a time out there. I shot 5 over, and I was just like, oh boy, at least I get to play the easier side next. And
sure.
I really like, I like 5, 6, and 7. I think those are like fun golf holes, but also like still challenging at the same time. Like, they require you to get up there and hit like a very good, solid shot.
Is there an aspect of either Champions Retreat that Augusta or Augusta National that you feel presents kind of a, I guess, like a comprehensive challenge for the players in the field? Is there something other than, I guess, just the atmosphere and what you're playing for and how iconic the tournament has become in just a couple short years? Is there anything specific that you think kind of everyone's dealing with?
I feel like the shots into the greens are really hard at both courses. Especially at Champions Retreat, they just redid the greens 2 years ago, I think, around there. And the greens are pretty firm, and there's a lot of, like, you're hitting from really low and then hitting straight back up. So it's a lot of, you have to get the ball up really quick to try and land it soft. So I feel like the approach shots in are really hard. Like, it's hard tee to green, but if something stands out to me, it's the approach shots. I find those, like, if you can hit your irons really well, it'll help. It'll make the day a little bit easier.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Champions Retreat, because I think for this entire tournament, everyone's really focused just on Augusta National. Champions Retreat is really hard. And
yes.
And you, I mean, it you got to get through that first day so that you're kind of in the run for the cut. And also, you know, I think it's just so, it's such a mental, it has to be such a mental challenge, because you never try and think about the cut line when you're playing a regular golf tournament, and mm-hmm. everyone wants to make the cuts. They can play a competition round and it gets a national. So right off the bat, before you ever open the player gift they give you, it's hanging right in front of you, the cut line.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That's a great way to put it. Champions Retreat is very hard. And that's, anytime someone asks me about it, they're like, oh, how's the tournament? Like, how's the first course y'all play? And I'm like, it's hard. Like, it's a big golf course.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be ready to go. Like, that after that first tee shot, like, you're ready. Like, It's going to be a long day.
Yep. Yeah, especially redoing the greens. So those are firm. So now you're having, I mean, it's going to be completely, well, I can't say completely, but I mean, you know you're going to see some differences when you get there and see how the ball's rolling out and everything is kind of how receptive it is.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, I think with golf courses that have elevated greens and the greens are firm, kind of reminds me a little bit, well, I mean, they're completely different golf courses, but, you know, Greyhawk, you know, when I was there for the national championship for the last 3 years, I would see, you know, if you're not able to get that ball really high and put some spin on it, you can't hold those greens and you're
yeah.
you really can't do anything out there. If you can't hold greens at Greyhawk, I mean, you got no shot.
Yeah, no, you're correct. I feel like it's a little bit more flat Greyhawk, obviously, but yeah. definitely like, from the first day you're out there till the last day you're out there, there is such a noticeable difference in how firm those greens are. Because they just can, everything can just get so dry. And yeah. it gets so windy in the afternoon. Even from morning to afternoon, you notice the difference in the greens and how firm they get. That's a good comparison.
I'm glad we're moving away from Greyhawk for the national championship. Because I can't remember who it was. I couldn't tell you the player. I couldn't tell you the team, but it was a practice round for the women's championship. And I think it was on 10. I know it was on 10. It was that par 4 right by the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And young lady hit a great shot, but it was kind of a flat trajectory, hit the green and just took off. And I'm just thinking, well, what is she going to do this week? Like what?
I know.
And not just her. I generally do not remember who it was, but I'm just looking at the shot. I'm like, what is that shot going to do here this week at the national championship?
Yeah, 10 was that hole was tough. That was a little booger of a hole.
We can say booger on this podcast. It's okay. You can you can say that. It's fine. Yeah, it's we're going to California for the national championship this year, so we're going to try something else this year. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get to some superstitions here. I can't let that one go. This is truly a family affair. I know that you're superstitious. I know your parents are superstitious, as you just said. How does a superstitious family deal with the aura of Augusta National? How do your parents even navigate the week? I have to ask, are they going?
They are coming, yes. Okay. They will be there, yeah.
Are they going to just like watch on different, I mean, how do they navigate that? I mean, I guess you have to kind of wait to see what works and then stick with it, or you have to kind of abandon something that doesn't work. How do they go about that?
Well, my dad definitely will be there every day. My mom will come every day too, but my mom sometimes, like, cause she didn't come to a lot of my golf tournaments growing up when I was playing all the junior events. She has come to a lot of my college events. And sometimes if I'm like playing bad now, she'll like just disappear and like leave, and she's like, I just don't want to mess you up. She's like, I don't want to cause any issues, like I'm just worried that if me being there is going to make you play bad, like I'm gone.
And how many conversations have you had with her to explain to her that she has nothing to do with it?
I do tell her that, but I don't think it's going to change anything. They're very set in their ways for sure. But my dad's like, he has this little tiny crappy water bottle. It's like a little mini water bottle.
Okay.
That he can only drink out of for golf tournaments. Like my mom literally washes it. It's like a plastic mini water bottle. And she has to wash it for him when he gets back from golf tournaments. Like that is the only water bottle he will drink out of. Okay. And my dad chews a lot of gum.
Okay.
And when I play golf, he can't chew any gum. Unless I'm like playing bad, then he'll put in a stick or two. But yeah, no gum consumption. He usually wears in like the same shirts, and like he has like a bunch of Auburn golf shirts. And if I like play bad in like a new one, that one's like out of the lineup. He won't bring it back in.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of anything else. Those are like the really good ones.
Don't worry, I'm not going to cut you off as long as you got. I mean, this is great. This is great stuff. I'm just thinking that protect. I mean, the putter in your bag and the water bottle are, I mean, protect both at all costs, right? I mean, just,
yeah,
we have to know where they are at all times.
You really do. The water bottle is like, it's a big thing. And he usually doesn't eat anything on the golf course either. And I think that's like a superstition, like no snacks ever.
Well, you let me know how that's going to work out. No snacks at Augusta National. That's gonna be a challenge.
He'll get stuff after. Like, he always eats, like, immediately after the round. But it's just once I tee it up. And he, like, always walks really far ahead. Like, I probably never get within, like, 100 yards of him. He's always, like, out in front, spotting.
I think your dad needs his own episode. I mean, I think I've really, I think we've really hit the mother load here.
You would get a kick out of him. He is very set in his ways. Very old school, for sure.
I am going to make it a point to find you during either a practice round or stroke. I'll find you during the tournament, find your dad, and say, I've heard all about the water bottle.
Yeah, because he has a flip phone, too, and doesn't have texting.
This is amazing. I mean, this is great.
Yeah, he has, like, it's a waterproof flip phone, so that's, like, kind of cool. But he, like, disabled the texting on it. Like, you can take it to Verizon and get them to disable texting. So, like, if you text my dad, it'll be like, we're sorry, this person is not, you cannot receive text messages or send you whatever the automated text message is. But yeah.
I'm fascinated. I'm going to find your dad. I need to learn more about this. This is incredible.
Yes. Very. It's one of a kind, to say the least.
Wow. You have, so we talked about Casey, she's making her debut, and then obviously you got another member of your team, Anna Davis. She won the event in 2022, and then, you know, you spent a lot of time with her, not just this season, but you also, you know, represented the United States at Women's World Am in Abu Dhabi. That's a lot of time to spend with Anna Davis, I'm just saying. But what's, now you watched her navigate the spotlight of winning that, and then you're dealing with navigating the spotlight of winning the U.S. Women's Am last year. That must be kind of interesting, you know, conversations you've had between both of you. Just how do you navigate just like, okay, now we're really in the spotlight of women's amateur golf. Has that been something that you've two been able to bond over just in this season?
I think so, but I will say Anna and I, when it comes to like success and accolades, like, she and I are very similar. She is, as you know, cool, calm, collected. Like, nothing freaks her out. Like, literally nothing. And I'm not as cool, calm, and collected, but I definitely don't talk a lot about winning the AM. Like, that's just not me. Like, if someone asks me about it, I'll tell you that I won it. But sure. I'm not going to just be like, oh, I'm so great. I won, you know? And she is definitely not like that either. Like, she is the same person as she was probably before it and now after it. She is a great girl. Like, we love having her on the team. I was super excited when Coach told me she was going to come in early. But, yeah, she and I are very similar. And we definitely talk about it a little bit. Like, I'll ask her. I ask her a lot of questions because she's had a lot of success from an early age.
Right.
So I always kind of asked her, like, oh, hey, when you got into the Evian, where did you stay? Like, those kind of things. And it's been great to bounce an idea off an 18-year-old, you know, when she played it when she was 16.
I know.
So it's a little different, but no, she's a great girl. She really is.
Yeah. I was, I'll tell you, her Champions press conference was highly entertaining. And also she just was kind of like, yeah, I guess I just won. And it was almost like the media was trying to get more out of her, but she's like, no, I came here, I competed, I won, I'm excited. I'm not going to, you know, do a dance or anything. But it was really kind of refreshing. She was like, yeah, this is just kind of another tournament. And she wasn't disrespecting it. She was like, no, I came here just like everyone else and I tried to win and I did. And that's,
yeah,
they gave me a trophy.
That's exactly. Like, the only thing she's really said about it was we did this like joint interview for a local newspaper. And when we were doing it, he was asking her about winning Augusta. And she was like, honestly, she was like, I think Megan had a lot more stressful of an experience because she knew she had the chance to win it. Like, it was just her and one other girl playing. She was like,
right.
I was not even in the final group or close to it. Like, I just went out there and I was like, if I can par the first hole, like, I'm going to have a good day. And she's like, I kind of backed into it. She's like, I played a great round of golf, but like, I wasn't leading going into it. It's a way different feeling. And I was like, that's a good way to put it, honestly.
Yeah. No, it's she posted and it held up. And yeah, I mean, it's, you can't really hide when you're in match play at a USAM. I mean, everyone kind of knows. I mean, that's, you're right there. Interesting fact, which I'm not sure you're aware of. And, you know, I feel like I'm on pretty safe ground as far as mentioning your age. I mean, you were 22 when you won the USAM. You're the oldest winner of the USAM over the last almost 25 years.
Yeah, I could not believe that when I heard that. I was like, oh, I was very shocked when I heard that stat.
Yeah, Marcy Newton was also 22 in the year 2000. And yeah, can you explain that one? I still don't understand how that's possible.
I really don't know either. I feel still very young, and I am young.
You are young. We're not approaching, you're not a mid-am. But I just saw that. It's like,
I could not believe that. When someone told me that, I was like, really? Like, I don't know how that's possible. I mean, the girls are just good younger now, I guess. I really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would think though that to win in match play requires a lot of experience. You need to kind of be there. And it seems tailor made for a senior in college, which is what you kind of, I mean, I know you took a fifth year, but essentially you're a senior last year.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. I was definitely not ready to win the AM 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever I played my first one. I was just happy to make it, honestly. I was just happy to get through the qualifier.
Yeah. Gosh, 3 Palmer Cups you've played on. You were just at the practice session for the Curtis Cup down here in South Florida. Extra year at Auburn. I know it's coming to a close as far as collegiate team experiences. There may be a couple other amateur ones in your future. And obviously, there's some things waiting for you in the pro side as well if you choose to go down that road. But what is it that you love so much about team golf?
It's the only time you get to play this individual sport with a group of other girls that consistently. I mean, there's team events. You can play for your country, all those things, which is great. And that's obviously what a lot of girls want to achieve. But like having a good group of 8, 9, 10 girls and getting to play with them all the time and getting to experience new things, old things, going to a tournament, getting to complain about stuff that you have to do on the day to day. It's great, you know, and this is, I always, turning pro out of high school, like that never crossed my mind. Never. I always wanted to go to college. My parents, that was never anything we'd ever talked about. So going to college was never really an option. I was just kind of figuring out where I wanted to go to college. And this has by far been the best 5 years of my short life so far. And I seriously, when people turn pro and don't go to college, I just want to tell them, like, you should do it for at least 1 year. Like, it is so much fun. You are going to regret not being around a group of girls all the time and getting to experience all the same things.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. I kind of feel, well, selfishly, I feel the same way. Like, I want amateur and collegiate golf to grow. And I, you know, as I'm certifiably old, so I can say this, you really want to enjoy that time. I know that every old person tells a college kid the same thing, like, you're not going to get this time back. But
no.
Yeah, I just, you know, enjoy it. Cause, and it's interesting, you know, I mean, gosh, we saw the announcement, you know, Rachel Heck's not turning pro, and you're seeing like just different things. Like, you know, we're going to see what Amelia Miliacha is going to do as a mid-am and as she's chasing other things that interest her, not just professional golf. So I don't know, maybe it's a pivot more towards, hey, enjoy college because the pro life will always be there. And it's, it is a job. I mean, you are going to enter the workforce.
Yeah. That's whenever COVID happened, Coach Llewellyn asked me like a few months after our season had ended, she was like, do you think you'll come back for a fifth year? And I was like, 100%, like professional golf will always be waiting for me. Like, I don't want to rush into that. Like, this is such a short amount of my life. Like, I want to do this for as long as I can. Like, and that's what I said. I was like, when I turn pro, like, no one's going to drive me to the tournaments. No one's going to book my flight. Someone's going to sign up for this event. Oh, we're playing in this. We're going to leave on this, book my hotels, pay for everything. You know, all those little things that you don't think about when you turn pro, it's like, oh, I'm going to miss that. I'm going to miss someone doing every little thing for me. And all I have to do is just show up and play golf.
Someone's got to pay for Buc-ee's. I mean,
I know.
I mean,
expensive too. It's not cheap.
Got to pay for your own Buc-ee's. I mean, that's not good.
I know.
Well, let's get you. I know we haven't talked about the pilot in the car right now, and let's give him a little pub because, you know, we're talking about people doing things for you. He's going to be on the bag. CJ Easley is your boyfriend. He's at Ole Miss. He's on the he was on the bag for the USAM win. He's going to be on the bag for ANWA, and this is his first trip, so he's got to be pretty excited as well. You know, for big tournaments, there can always kind of be that debate of, okay, you know, I go with a club caddy that has, you know, the course knowledge versus do I go with someone that I know? Maybe I'm going to sacrifice some course knowledge, but at least I know the caddy better and I'm comfortable. I'm guessing that gap is pretty short when you have someone in the bag that's a collegiate golfer themselves. I mean, what does he bring to the table other than, you know, just knowing you? I mean, what does he bring to the table maybe over another kind of club caddy kind of situation?
He, at the AM, that's really the only time he's caddied for me. So all my comparisons to that week are he is very cool, calm, and collected. He, nothing really stresses him out. And I can get very in the nitty gritty about little tiny things. And those things just don't bother him. And he knows my game really well. He's been to a ton of my lessons when we go to my house in the summer. And so for me, I've always kind of wanted that advice of my swing more so than what's happening on the golf course. And he is the best of both worlds for that. He can help me with my swing, kind of tell me, hey, that swing was a little too long or a little too quick. And he knows me really well. So he knows the little things that are going to drive me crazy. Like, I don't like when anyone, if you're in my group or playing with me, if you like talk to my golf ball, because I always think it's going to do the opposite. So at the AM, we had this whole conversation. I was like, CJ, whatever you do this whole week, do not open your mouth until the ball has touched ground.
Wow.
And even then, just wait. Wait till I've made the reaction. And I remember on one shot I hit, I kind of started it right. And it ended up turning out to be a great shot. And he was like, you have no idea how badly I want to say get left, get left. And I was like, I would have lost it on you if you'd have done that. And so all those little things, like he knows obviously golf super well. And he knows what's not going to upset me. And he's just there to support me the whole time. And I feel like that's what makes me play good.
And you can have those kind of conversations with him that you maybe would hold back.
Yes.
Like you would probably, I mean, I don't know, maybe you would. Like, it's hard to tell a club caddy you don't know very well. Like, all right, listen, Dave, I need you to like not talk when the ball's in the air. Like, you may not have that conversation. I don't know, maybe you would.
I'm too nice. I wouldn't say that to a local caddy. To CJ, I was just like, I just told him, like, we did, like, at our 9-hole course, we did, like, a little trial run.
Oh, you made him try out. Perfect. Okay, you made him try out.
And that's, when we were leaving today, he's like, oh, we didn't have a trial run today. And I'm like, I know, we didn't. We should have, but.
This guy only wins majors. That's all he does. He just wins majors.
I know. But, yeah, that's actually a good point. I can tell him, like, if he's doing something that's bothering me or. We definitely, at the AM, we had a few disagreements, especially, like, in the stroke play rounds. Like, there was a few times he told me this after the week on like the fourth hole of the first round. He was like, I really thought about just like putting the bag down and walking in. He's like, it did cross my mind for like a minute.
Wow.
But I was like, I would have been stuck in LA. So I didn't really know what the decision to do was, but it's just small stuff. Well, just like the only thing that kind of will get us in trouble. We both are a little bit stubborn, which I think all golfers are.
Sure.
But after the first few days at the AM, he was just like, you have to make the ultimate decision. Like, I don't want to be held accountable for any decision. You know, I'm going to give you as much advice as you want or as little as you want. And I'm just there to really keep you calm and just help you as much as I can.
So did you say that was his first time caddying for you?
He caddied for me in like a small event, but it was just kind of like a fun thing to do.
Sure.
But the AM was like the first real one. And I was just like, okay, like, let's just do it. And at least we'll get to go to LA. Like, it'll be a fun trip. You know?
Sure.
When I say we really did not have any expectations, like, that's what people ask me. Like, did you go into it thinking you were going to win? And I was like, absolutely not.
No.
Like, I know that's a terrible way to go about it.
Well, but it's the AM. I mean, there's just so many things that go side. That the AM's different. I mean, I don't care how good you are. It doesn't matter. I mean, look, you're seventh in the world right now. And I mean, you have your resume from top to bottom is literally like you check every single box. But like 2 years ago, Michael Thor Bjornsson loses his match to Andrew Von Lasso of Mid-Am from Spokane, Washington. And I love AVL, but even he was like, did that just happen? I mean, anything can happen in match play.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, you just kind of go in and you're like, all right, I just want to get to match play. But after that, who knows?
Yeah, it's a long week, too. Like, yeah. You're just ultimately just hoping you make it, like not getting too tired. Honestly, that was our whole thing.
Now, you are, as I said, on the road to Augusta. You are not, believe it or not, you are not the first U.S. women's amateur champion that I have recorded a podcast episode with while driving. Because that's exactly what happened when I recorded my episode with Jensen Castle. She actually had the Cox Trophy, the U.S. Women's Amateur Trophy, in the back of her SUV while driving. It was in like a trunk or something. I'm not sure. On the men's side of the USAM, I do have knowledge of the Havemeyer getting a little dinged up in the possession of the champion. The Robert Cox Trophy is, it's, how can I say this? It's not the best, most conducive trophy for transit. Is that is
no
that, okay it's
that's a great way to put it.
It's tall, it's just it's not the typical like cup trophy that everyone is used to seeing. Have there been any, like, have you traveled with that thing?
Honestly, I know this is gonna sound terrible, I just buckle it into the front seat of my car.
Okay,
that's really how I travel with it. I know I need to use the case, but the case is massive. Like, after I won, they're like, okay, do you want to take the trophy with you? And I was like, heck yeah, I want to take the trophy with me. Like, duh. And the lady, she was like, it's going to weigh about 75 pounds in its carrier. I was like, okay, absolutely not. Like, can y'all just ship it?
Yeah.
Because I cannot take that. And the oversized key would have been very high.
Yeah.
And the case is, like, so massive. Like, I cannot explain to you how big it is. It takes up, like, a whole trunk.
And so you just kind of, so where is it Auburn now or is it at home?
Yeah, it's at Auburn. It's like in the front entrance of our golf house. Like when you walk in the front doors, it's sure. Right there. But I've taken it home. I took it home for Christmas break and I'll take it home for the summer before I have to send it back. But, yeah, it's been to a lot of places, honestly. It for the first few months I had it, I felt like almost like every other week it was making a trip, making an appearance somewhere.
That's awesome. That's fun.
Yeah.
You got to do that stuff because it reminds you that it's not just about you. It's about all the other people.
Exactly. 100%.
That's got to be fun. Well, safe travels on your way to Augusta. I'll be up there shortly. I feel like there's so many people I need to meet. I need to meet your dad. I need to see the water bottle. Need to check on CJ, make sure he's doing okay. And I'll see how you're progressing, of course. But, all the best this week at the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And there you have it. Special thanks to Megan Schofield for joining me on this episode here at the Back of the Range. Again, don't forget to follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Every single episode is available at thebackoftherange.com. Enjoy the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and we'll see you next time here at the Back of the Range.